The meeting will come to order, and obviously we do not have a quorum, so we will not do the minutes yet, but we will do Representative Benson's bill, House File 366, and Representative Benson, since you are a member of the committee, please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 366 to lay over for possible inclusion of K-12 on this finance bill.
Representative Benson moves House File 366 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill is designed to take care of what I consider to be a flaw in the law, and we are seeking to eliminate that flaw, or what is called a cliff, that is built in the present law. One of the things I discovered after getting here, being asked by one of the senior members of the caucus, of my caucus, what would you like to learn about, Benson? And I said, I'd really like to understand education finance. And there was a large, long guffaw, and he said, well, good luck. Do you plan to spend the rest of your life here? So with that brief introduction, I would like to introduce someone who does understand finance, having to do with this particular bill. Dr. Dennis Pearson, Superintendent of Minnetonka Public Schools, and because of the pressure of time, I will forego the rest of my comments until the end for Dr. Pearson.
Thank you, Representative Benson. Dr. Pearson, welcome to the committee, and please restate your name for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Benson. My name is Dennis Pearson. I'm Superintendent of Minnetonka. And it sounds like Representative Benson just set me up with that introduction, knowing all about school finance. So, but I am here today to speak to the concerns we have on House File Number 366. We have wrestled with the provisions of this law for the last couple of years. I can't remember. I think it's really been 2 years now that we've had levies that have been affected by this provision. It's the provisions are really based strictly on referendum revenue, and it provides, as you can see in the law itself, $23 per pupil unit versus $46 per pupil unit for those districts that are above the 95th percentile. And the operating levies for our district, and I know for probably all districts that have them, are an essential part of our funding for providing educational opportunities for boys and girls in our district. There are other revenues that the legislature provides, such as categorical revenue that is not part of the calculation at all. And if you look at an entire package of how much revenue a district has to spend, Minnetonka, contrary to what I'm sure many people would tell you right off the top of their head, is about the middle of the pack in terms of spending per pupil in the state of Minnesota. That's undoubtedly a bit of a shock to many people. And so my point there is that not counting all of the revenues and just singling out the referendum revenue is creating some problems for us in terms of how we qualify for this particular revenue. There are two calculations that we think complicate the formula. One is that metro districts are determined separately from non-metro districts. And right now, it's not clear to us nor the Department of Education whether Minnetonka is in or out. They do these calculations, as we understand it, about every third year. And so they may determine that in year one we were in the 95th, above the 95th percentile. Year two, we were below the 95th percentile. Year three, we did something or someone else did something that got us above. So it's a lot of uncertainty for our district to receive these funds from a tax levy, strictly Minnetonka School District funds, and not be certain whether we should use them for educating our students hold them until the state decides whether Minnetonka or another district might have qualified or not. So we're not only believing that this whole provision should be changed of districts above the 95th percentile qualifying for a different amount in a different way, but we're also concerned about the fact that we are uncertain about the future of our levy once it's been made. And we would ask that you you consider those factors in making your judgment about it. Representative Betsinall, do you like to have me take questions?
Thank you, Superintendent Peterson. Representative Benson, and I also want to welcome Representative Anderson, who has an identical bill to Representative Benson's and also Representative Rood's does. And since Representative Benson is on the committee and can be there for the discussions to champion it, we are moving his bill, but the other two bills, are identical, and I'm very pleased that you can be here. And I will mention that I am a co-author of Representative Anderson's bill, and this affects my districts as well. So Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. When I first heard of this issue, it was actually prior to being sworn into office. The Wayzata School District has been very great about communicating to me what their concerns are as far as the legislative process goes, and this is one of the top issues for them. And it's not just a punishment for metro suburban schools. You need to realize that this impacts all school districts throughout the state of Minnesota. When you look at the greater Minnesota, there's a list of school districts that also get hit by this, Fulda being one of them, Chicago, Alberta, Browns Valley, a whole host of school districts out there that get half the amount of the equity revenue. And that's why you'll see co-authors on my bill, I'm sure on Representative Benson's bill, from all across the state. It's not that these folks know us well and are buddies, but that they have school districts that are impacted by this too. So I want to make sure that it could hit anyone at any point and that we need to be diligent to make sure that we address this concern.
Thank you very much.
Too.
Yes.
I apologize. Today I brought reinforcements here with, I have Superintendent Bob Austin from the Wayzata School District and his financial officer, Alan Holtman, too, from the Wayzata School District.
Thank you. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this point then, we could take some questions, or if Dr. Austin has a statement or two he'd like to make, that would be good.
Thank you. Welcome, Superintendent Austin, if you could identify yourself for the tape, and welcome also to Alan Hopeman, who's also joined us up there.
Thank you, Representative Greil, members of the committee. We appreciate this opportunity to testify on this bill or these bills. Our Executive Director of Finance and Operations, Ellen Hopeman, had put together some talking points that we thought we'd run through quickly that we can distribute to the committee that might be helpful as we run through these. Without getting into a lot of detail, Superintendent Peterson has already mentioned, the district defines themselves over the 95th percentile in the metropolitan area. Are eligible, if you're below the 95th percentile, you're eligible for $13, 1.25 times $13, or $16.25, plus what you got from the old formula, which may or may not be anything, plus the $46 of equity revenue. However, if you find yourself above the 95th percentile, which very unpredictable, if you will or will not, as has been pointed out, you then and simply receive the one-half of that $46 or $23 in equity revenue. So you, at a minimum, a district that finds itself crossing that threshold or falling off the cliff, if you will, into that upper 5%, you're going to lose $39.25 per pupil at a minimum. And you can lose that amount by gaining a very small amount. So you can be in a situation very easily where you gain a little and lose a lot. So we find that obviously problematic in planning and putting the budget together. And all the variables that control it are beyond our control. If you have an inflationary factor on your levy and it depends on the rate of inflation, if the neighboring district does not, you can squeak past them and lose a considerable amount of revenue. If your ratio of resident students to non-resident students changes, or if your neighbor's ratio changes, you'll move back and forth. So it's a very complicated formula that causes some hard-to-predict changes. And the another problem, as Superintendent Peterson pointed out, is that you're well into the future before you know for sure where you actually ended up regarding this part of our part of the formula. In fact, in our district, in when we certified a levy back in December of 2005, we were below the 95th percentile for the current year. We find ourselves now, we believe, above it, even though we don't know for sure until February of 08 whether we are in fact above it or not, but we believe we are. So that's very, very problematic in planning. Now, we think we are above the threshold now because we've passed Minnetonka. We've traded off for our position here because Minnetonka does not have an inflationary factor on their levy, and we have one on the ones that our voters supported a year ago last November, and so that inflation factor pushed us just slightly above Minnetonka and ended up reducing our revenue by $445,000 because of that narrow passage of Minnetonka. So we look forward to next year. It's interesting because the scene changed this past fall. Roseville and Moundsview both passed levies, and we think that means that for next year, Roseville and Moundsview will, either one or both, will pass us, therefore moving us out of the top three. And beyond, who knows? I think Roseville does not have an inflation factor built in, so we'd probably pass them again. I'm not sure about Moundsview, but you get the picture. It gets to be a very unstable, unpredictable situation that ends up impacting one's revenue by a large degree. And we're not a high revenue district, as Superintendent Peterson pointed out. The last figure I saw, again, I think different from most what most people would assume, we're right in the middle of the pack with our revenue per pupil in the state. I think we're 178th. Now, with our new levy in place for this year, we've moved up some, but I'm sure I can assure you we're below the top third of districts in the state in terms of revenue. So we're not a high-spending revenue district at all. If the legislation that's being considered here would be enacted, it would not eliminate the cliff, but it would certainly mitigate it. It would remove that $23 from a loss, keeping the loss to whatever whoever would be impacted to the approximately $13, $14 loss. In our case, instead of being impacted to the tune of $445,000, it would have been $185,000, which certainly is more manageable, as is pointed out. It also should be pointed out that there's little, if any, chance that any state revenue is impacted here. It's levy authority that we're talking about for any of the impacted district, and of course the same phenomenon is at play with the districts in greater Minnesota, although it impacts more districts there because of the greater number as well. So we appreciate your consideration of
thank you very much. We've got about 7 minutes left for this hearing, and we do have at least one person that I know of that would like to testify. So, but first, are there any members from any questions from members? Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can we get House Research to run through this run here?
Representative Dietrich, yes. Now we have Mr. Strom and Mr. Crow both here, and I hope your son is better, Mr. Strom.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The run for this bill is labeled Equity Revenue FY 2008 Estimated Cost of House File 366.
And it's in our packets.
And it's in your packets. And if you look at the top line on the very right-hand side, you'll see that the statewide revenue impact is $783,000 if House File 366 were to be adopted. As the witness just said, that money is mainly local levy. That's a split of aid and levy, but it's mainly local levy. It's local levy for all three of the metro districts that are affected by it, and it's some state aid for some of the rural districts that are affected. In terms of what those columns show, though, there are four parts to equity revenue, and the part that we're talking about here is the second to last column, where you can see everyone except those districts listed at the top of the page gets an even $46 per pupil, and those that are above the 95th percentile, the three metro districts and the 15 non-metro districts, only get $23 per pupil. But otherwise, it's a flat amount of $46 per pupil for all the districts in the state. The other three columns of equity revenue, the first column, as the witnesses have just said, is essentially the $13 for those that that qualify, plus a ratio depending on how big their referendum is. So a district with a small referendum will get the largest amount of money from that, and as you look up and down the list there, in the second to column from the beginning of the printout is the referendum amount per pupil. If you were to look at McGregor as an example, which is district number 4, you'll see they have a referendum of just $1 per pupil, and the only reason they have that is for the equity revenue that that generates. You can see their total equity revenue is $200 per pupil unit, and that's a result of having a very small referendum. If they had no referendum, then their equity would be relatively quite a bit smaller. And as this bill deals with those districts, those top 18 districts in the state that are above the 95th percentile.
Madam Chair.
Representative Benson, real quickly, because we've got another member that has a question.
Okay, I just had maybe a clarification. I wanted Mr. Strom to clarify the point he just made before we move on. I just wondered, Mr. Strom, if you could explain, for example, in the example that was given here by the superintendent from Wayzata, the 400 and some thousand, from whom does that money come from and to whom does it go?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, for the metro districts where the equity revenue is all from the local property tax, the property taxpayers would receive a reduction in a district that gets above the 95th percentile. So it essentially comes back to their property taxpayers. It's not state aid for the metro districts. It's all local levy.
And it would be clear then for the members of the committee to understand that these funds are not coming out of the state revenue.
No, but of course, Representative Benson, we have a levy target that we have to meet, just like a finance target. So these bills cost money, too, in this committee. Representative Erickson.
Oh, thank you, Representative Greiling. I just wanted Mr. Strom to explain as simply as he can how you arrive at the ranking of the percentiles.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, what we do is we line up the district's basic revenue, which is the same for all districts, plus their referendum revenue per pupil. And then we rank those from highest to lowest and then divide them into two regions, metro and non-metro. 49 districts, I believe, in the metro region. And those districts, then there are three that would be in the 95th percentile or above. For greater Minnesota, there are 15. So basically, as your referendum gets larger on a per pupil basis, we just rank them in a sorted order. And the top 15 in greater Minnesota and the top three in the metro area are excluded from the full $46 and get only the $23.
Thank you. Hey, Mr. Lundell has asked to testify.
Madam Chair, Brad Lundell, members of the committee. Madam Chair, I'm Brad Lundell. You're the member of the committee. I really apologize to Representatives Benson, Anderson, and Rood for not informing them prior today. I thought it was tomorrow that this bill was going to be up, and I didn't look close enough to schedule, so I do apologize for that. I'm the Executive Director of Schools for Equity and Education. And I think that I'm probably guilty of designing this equity formula in the first place. Because when I see legislation like this, I feel even more guilty.
And you should.
I think I designed something that was, I designed this nice little garden that's now overrun with weeds. And I just really feel that I have to get up today and say that we just don't think that this bill goes in the direction that the equity formula should be going. That's not to say that we don't need to take a long look at the equity formula, make the equity formula look better than it is right now, and make it work better for all districts that are really affected by equity problems. I just don't think that this bill goes in that direction. Let me say for a couple of reasons why. Going back 2 years ago, just the $46 of excess, or the $46 of levy authority, was kind of latched on to the equity formula. I didn't ask it to be there. I don't think anyone in the equity community really asked it to be there, but that's where it ended up. But it ended up there for one very good reason, and that's because, as Superintendent Oslin said, There was a deal made, and I'm not going to say that future legislatures have to, you know, adhere to the deals of previous legislatures. But the deal made at that time was that the referendum cap was going up, and it went up considerably.
Mm-hmm.
And in part of that, part of the deal then was there was the 46-23 split mm-hmm. on the equity revenue. We can say it's right, we can say it's wrong, but that was the deal that was made at that time. I wasn't particularly happy with that deal, and I'll expand why. As the conference committee was kind of coming into its meeting, I designed an alternative to the equity formula that would have benefited the district sitting here to a great degree. I'm sympathetic with their situation when it comes to categorical revenue. I think Minnetonka and Wayzata sit in the bottom five. I think two of the other people in the bottom five are people that I work with in Schools for Equity and Education. The distribution of categorical revenue in this state is appalling, and I think it doesn't make much sense in many ways, and we need to fix that. I would say that this, unfortunately, doesn't really do that. It just puts another tire patch on a bad equity formula when we should be really taking a step back, saying what we want, if we indeed want an equity formula, and then say what do we want that equity formula to look like and what do we want to accomplish. I think those are things that we talk about in here. We're really not doing that. Now, I want to sympathize with the Minnetonka situation. I know that 2 years ago, when I was sitting with Dr. Peterson in the governor's reception room, he gave an impassioned plea about, you know, raising the referendum cap, and I can understand his needs, and I can understand why they've waited and have not pursued that additional revenue. I also, at the same time, understand the difficulty that Hopkins is in right now, being in statutory operating debt, and needing a way out. And I think that if there are ways that we can get to those problems of districts like that, that's a better way to do this than this kind of doing this, you know, you're giving $23 of the increased levy authority to districts that are in far different cases or having far different cases. I'm not going to say, you know, take much more time except to say we've been working very hard on PS Minnesota, and I know Alan Holtman has worked, has been part of the solutions group working with that, and part of what we're doing and trying to do in PS Minnesota is to raise all boats, to make the general education formula the main engine of funding, and to, again, take a look at the equity formula. Again, we shouldn't need an equity formula if the needs of all kids in the state are met in the general ed formula. But I just see, when I see this, it makes me queasy. It makes me wonder what it is we're actually doing here.
Okay, maybe thank you very much.
Yeah.
We appreciate that. And that we do, all of us, I think, wish that the PS Minnesota bill were ready this year, because we'd like to have a new automobile, but instead we're looking at tire patches because there are problems, and we don't have the PS Minnesota bill with true numbers in it. We will have a scaled-down version that I know is being signed right now and to further study this for next year. But we all sincerely wish that it were easier. We know on this committee that it is not, and we are looking for it. We can use all the help we can get from everybody. So thank you very much. Is there any other public testimony on for or against this bill? Superintendent Watun, please come forward. We're trying to conclude this hearing fairly fast. Is there anybody else that wishes to testify after Superintendent Watun? Okay. Welcome to the committee, and Superintendent Watun,
thank you.
Leads the Mountview School District, one of which I represent, and we're all very sorry that she's retiring at the end of this school year at such a young age. Welcome, and please say your name for the record.
Yeah, thank you. And Jan Watun, Superintendent of the Mountview School District. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my colleagues have done an outstanding job of explaining some of the numbers, and I can only tell you that after 30 years, I'm not going to pretend I understand this formula. I am only here to tell you that when you are in the situation we're in, and we're going to talk to you, I hope, later this afternoon about our declining enrollment, and you go out to your public, and the public is willing to approve a operating levy, as our community did, and when you're one of the very few districts in the metro area that were fortunate enough to pass a levy, and then you need to try to explain to your community that just did this that now they're going to lose $750,000 because the ranking somehow ends up in a different place than it was when we were at the 55th percentile before passing our levy, That's very hard. That's a hard thing to explain. I don't know how to explain it very intelligently, and I can only tell you that $750,000 would buy a lot of teachers in Moundsview. And that's all I wanted to add to the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That adds a lot. I want to welcome Representative Rood, who is the author of the third bill that's identical to the ones that we have under consideration today. And Representative Rood, do you want to say anything or just up here in support of the bill?
Up here in support.
Okay, very good.
On with the letter.
All right. We are, Representative Heidrick, and you're going to get the last question, and the time is really up for this hearing.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Rood. No, I'm not going to ask. But anyways, I just, when Mr. Lundell did a good job addressing one end of the issue, the other one is the State Department, and all of you would have received that. There's a disparity aid report that's given out, and it has to do with the law referendum and some of the things that the state is required to do to address disparities. But everybody's, all of you, yeah, I know all of you received that report from the Department of Education. I would have all of you look at that. Thank you.
Okay. Yep. Chair, can I make a final little comment?
And before you do that, there was a question that Representative Dietrich asked that staff has now answered, and that total number for this bill, the $783,000, is 90% levy. That was your question. Did that answer that, Representative Dietrich?
10% state aid.
And 10% state aid. Yep. Okay, closing comments, Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. All three of us who represent these districts, and I guess I'm on ground zero because I represent all three of the districts, Minnetonka, Wayzata, and Hopkins. And I live very close to St. Louis Park, who is the other district, out of 49 metro districts who are faced with this problem. And so I have three districts that have cars along the side of the road. All those cars have a tire that needs patching. And so I'm here, and you're here, and you're here, seeking help to get these tires patched, because this problem is coming down the road, and we may not have time to wait for a larger, more encompassing solution to the problem that we're facing right now. And I just want to remind everyone on the committee that Minnetonka ranks 149th in per pupil spending. Wayzata is 193rd. That's according to the year 5 school profiles report. And the point there is that we're not overspending, and we are trying to deal with something that is causing our districts a great difficulty in forecasting, because it's not based on total revenue, just referendum revenue. And our districts spend very modest amounts in compared to many other districts in the state. And so the bottom line for us is that we're seeking that this 95 percentile cliff built in the current law be eliminated.
Thank you, Representative Benson. Representative Anderson, closing.
Just to go over the whole issue of this, we are making it really difficult for school districts to manage their money wisely when they don't know that whether or not this is going to hit them. They've already got the money budgeted and spent, and then we come back and say, oh, by the way, we're going to take it back. That did not make good sense. That's not good government policy, and so that's why I'm so passionate about this and getting this changed. And with Representative Benson, I also represent Wayzata School District and Hopkins School District. So for me, in my area, it's super important. We've talked about with the Wayzata School District, it's a $450,000 hit that they would be experiencing. And you can imagine if you had to do that within your own budget, whether in business or whatever, how would you come up with that money? And I'm guessing that you would be struggling just as much as these folks are. And I just hope that I can count on your support. And thanks for your time today, too.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Representative Rood, for being here as well. It's nice once again to see a good team working on an issue. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We do have a quorum, members. Representative Swales, have you read the minutes?
I have, Madam Chair. And I so move.
Representative Swales moves approval of minutes of February 20th. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. House File 349, Representative Solberg.
With regard to
Representative Fulberg, welcome to the committee. And did you have a member to move your bill, or would you like
to? Well, would you be so kind as to have that considered?
I would be happy to do that for the chair of the Ways and Means Committee. I move House File 349, and hopefully he'll remember that when he's giving us money for K-12 finance.
Pressure.
Yeah, for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome, and please proceed and introduce your witnesses.
Madam Chair, let me make a couple of statements first, if you would, please. It was kind of interesting that the Minnetonka and Wayzata school districts have three representatives representing them. I think I have 13 school districts in my district, and some of them I'm the only representative of that particular school district as well. So I'm very pleased to be here. We have a kind of a car theme, I guess. The bill that I brought before you is not a flat tire or a patch, but probably a blowout for our school district. And I bring that to you.
Representative Fulberg always has a way with words.
Madam Chair and members, the McGregor School District sits in the middle part of the state of Minnesota. They're 25 miles, I think, from Aiken, 25 miles from Carmel, the next school district, probably 25 miles from Malacca, quite a while, and probably 50 miles to Hill City. And the College of St. Scholastica is opening up a charter school next year. When they came down and said that this has, besides all the other issues of declining enrollment that we're all facing, whether it be Minnetonka or all of us on that particular issue, they're facing a kind of a unique situation. And all school districts, I think, are dealing with the issues of charter school. And I said, well, you have to deal with that. However, they are in somewhat of a unique situation in that they have kind of no place else to turn. Here's the headlines that they had from the recent paper in Aiken, which is in Aiken County, where they're planning to cut $650,000 out of their school budget for this coming year. So when they approached me, I said, well, the only thing I can do is to try to help maybe ease your pain a little bit, and to also, as the charter school gets open, they don't know how many students they'll lose or how many they may gain from other things, and we'll give them a little bit of flexibility on some one-time shot. So House file that's before you is an attempt to do that. I have with me today the superintendent of Mr. Hamill.
Herman,
I'm sorry. New on the job also to McGregor area, and school board member Bert Sample as well. And I'd like to have them give you some testimony on this.
Thank you, Representative Solberg. Welcome, Superintendent Herman. We'll have you go first, and please restate your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Rick Herman. I'm the superintendent at McGregor. What I'd like to present you with is a look at our declining enrollment issue and our funding problem. Over the past 10 years, you've got stuff in your packets that kind of outline our district over the last 10 years. 10 years ago, approximately, we were in statutory operating debt. We climbed our way out of statutory operating debt. And over the last 3 years, or 4 years, we've had a declining enrollment of about 6 to 7%. As you can see, the top lines of the ADM, we've lost 25 this year. We're looking at a declining enrollment of about 65 next year. The charter school is set to open with 65 enrollees. And having conversations with them, they know they're not going to get them all from us because we are the closest. But on the same token, there are some other districts where they've got some children that are going to be coming back to go to that school. We're looking at losing about 40, 45 students, and that's a huge loss in enrollment for a school district our size when we only have about 425 students the way it is. So we're looking at facing some budget cuts of approximately $650,000 just to balance our budget with that loss in enrollment, and understanding that we may lose those all initially, but we may get some back, and we may have some more leave, and we may have, because the charter school is set to open up about 4 miles from our doorstep. So we're a little concerned about the influx of students back and forth as well. So we're looking at, is there a way we could, with the bill that Representative Solberg has offered, is there a way for us to get some money just to get us over that hump and make sure where we're at and stabilize our funding a little bit?
Thank you very much, Superintendent Herman, and Director Samples from the school board, which is, there's many former school board members on this committee, including myself and Representative Solberg.
No, I was the mayor.
Oh, you were mayor. Oh, geez, he was much more important, I guess.
I relied on the school board for my paycheck.
Okay, well, that shows that we are, school board members are more important than yeah. Welcome, Director Samples. Please restate your name for the tape.
Madam Chair, my name is Brett Sample, and I'm a member of the school board, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about our district. 63% of the students in our district receive free lunch or reduced lunches, which is the fifth most in the state of Minnesota. 24% of our students are identified with having special needs, which is 2 times higher than the state average. We are the 9th sparsest school district in the state of Minnesota. And per capita income in the district is only $21,100, which is the 12th lowest in the state. So as you can see, we do have a problem.
Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Solberg.
You know, just one of the other things that I want the committee to be aware of. Much of the valuation in the McGregor School District is based around Big Sandy Lake. And Big Sandy Lake is a nice lake to have a cabin on, but with the tax laws we have, if they pass an operating referendum, they don't pay any of the operating referendum. And that's a big chunk of the valuation within the school district. There's, you know, not much else for evaluation. And as you drive in McGregor, two things I want you to be aware of. McGregor always say in that part of the country, if you build a fence post, you have a well, because it's some pretty nice bog area, and natural filtering for your water, hopefully, down here. But the second thing is, as well, it's one thing I need to relate to, and it's not when you're pervert of your committee, but my wife was traveling home in her car, had the cruise control on, and she likes to drive at the speed limit, and the road that's coming into McGregor is Highway 65, the major highway, and it was so rough she had knocked the cruise control off. And I got home and she said, as your constituent, and I knew I was in trouble. And so the area has some unique problems, and when I said I would draft the bill for them, this is a thing that's probably out of their control to be able to manage their budget, and I would hope for you some consideration.
Thank you, Representative Solberg. And I think looking at all these demographics from the McGregor area, it reminds us that poverty and problems are not all in the core cities. They are all over the state and certainly in the rural areas as well. We have a lot of commonalities, Representative Solberg. When I was going home from the legislature Monday night and I was driving up Rice Street, a deer hit my car.
Oh.
So we have problems from, you know, the greater Minnesota area, sometimes in the city as well. I have my car is in the shop. The deers make a big dent. So, we have a couple of questions. And
Madam Chair, maybe we can extend that deer season down here.
We have a couple of members that have questions, and I'm going to call on them first. But let me also ask, is there anyone in the audience that's planning to testify on this bill? Okay, Representative Demmer.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very sensitive to the issues you have with declining enrollment. I have some schools in my district also that suffer from that. We had the district that I'm from, as a matter of fact, had statutory operating debt. We had to pass a referendum in order to get out from underneath that. And then, of course, the concern is ongoing. How do you handle that? I have some concerns, Madam Chair, and I'm sure Representative Solberg, you're aware of this too. This is a precedent. We have 300 and some odd school districts in the state of Minnesota, and many of them would like to bring a bill and say, write us a check. So it's a precedent that is very interesting. One question I do have is, this is $200,000 each of the next 2 years. What happens then, Mr. Superintendent, to your budget to when that $200,000 isn't there and you have it built into your salaries, you have it built into your expenditures? How are you going to handle that ongoing?
Representative, or Superintendent, whichever one was here to answer, and I would just also say to members that then when we have a topic on any given subject, we're trying as best as we can, if the bills are in, to have them on the same day, and we have Representative Eakin's bill next, which actually has decline enrollment aid for all districts, so we have options here to consider. But Superintendent Herbin, maybe this one would be for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To answer that question, I think the first thing we've looked at is we know we have to make some budget cuts to help balance our budget, so we are in the process of doing that as we speak. What we're looking at is hopefully this becomes a way to bridge that gap between where we're at now. With if nothing happens, we look at, you know, a $650,000 budget deficit. If this can help us with that and bridge that gap, we make our cuts. We look at streamlining our system more and making it more effective and more efficient. I think there's ways in 2 years we can do that. What's happened is this has come upon us. I think that the issue has been the charter school was going to start. It wasn't going to start. It was going, you know, and I know that other districts have been saddled with that same kind of thing, but when we lose that many students out of our enrollment, it becomes a real big budget issue for us in a hurry. And so we're trying to make that work as best we can by making some budget cuts that we know we're going to have to make, and then hopefully this will help bridge that gap between now and 2 years from now, so when we hit that wall after 2 years, so to speak, we'll have things in place that can carry us through to the future.
Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair and Representative Demmer, I think you hit the nail on the head, because it is a difficult situation. And, you know, we could address it as Representative Eakin, and maybe the committee is going to be addressing it and trying to deal with the declining enrollment. But the impetus of the bill that I have is some bridge funding for them to be able to deal with the one situation that is unknown to them at this particular time. And quite frankly, if they were had some other options of being closer to other school districts, they could probably do a lot more sharing and that type of thing. But they're in the middle of nowhere almost, and so that's why I brought this particular bill to us. But you have a very legitimate question, and this I would view just as, and they know that as some bridge type of gap funding for them.
Thank you. We have Representative Dabney, then Representative Olson, and then we'll go on to the next bill, which where we can continue this topic. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Representative Riley, and I'll not share with Kitty my experience driving home Monday night and the brief interaction with Minneapolis police and the question of stop signs. I stopped. He agreed. In the end.
After you showed him your card?
No. You know those big bright beams that they have?
Yeah.
He just kind of hit my car briefly and let me know that a fuller stop might be appreciated again in the future. So I thought I'd done it.
Representative Dabney, your question.
Thank you. Thank you for saving me that, I'm sure. But the piece that I'd like to explore is, what is this charter school? What is the attraction? I mean, you're expecting to lose folks. This is kind of a market share question. What is the attraction of this charter school, and how is the district trying to position itself to respond? I mean, in some respects, it's a step off from Representative Demmer's question.
Solberg.
The charter school, as I understand it, is being sponsored by St. Scholastica. I think they will probably have an attraction for them. It's in a fairly new building that's being put up by them. The issue of that McGregor has come to me with that is that they don't know how many people that will come from other parts of the state to be able to attend this charter school, or will they be taking all of their students from the McGregor School District? If it's a shared type of situation and they don't know that, then they can probably manage it. If less come from the McGregor School District, they can probably manage that better. But again, I would repeat that this is an attempt to give them a little bit of some bridge gapping as they go down that road and kind of know what their attendance loss is going to be as a result of this.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Solberg, this is a tough issue to deal with, I know. And I remember when it first started coming down here, and I'm encouraged that the reactions and responses to you are much more friendly now.
I was friendly to you before, wasn't I?
Oh, yeah. The fact that what I'm alluding to there is the fact that this is growing and it's an issue becoming more prominent, and it reflects that we're not really grappling with the root issue of decline, not having growth. I have excess growth. We're bursting at the seams. We can't handle the growth up until the real estate slowdown here recently, but we're growing faster than we can really bear it. And you and others across the state face decline. And it begs the question of what would $1 million of economic development do to bring people to your area, in contrast to almost $500,000, or, and again later possibly more, for, you know, the Band-Aid, which is what it really is. I mean, this is really just kind of a Band-Aid approach or a fix of a blowout.
Madam Chair, I'm going to not dealing with education.
I
appreciate a short answer because we need to get on to the next.
We will do
stuff.
That. But I'm going to give you the school board member tell you how far you guys to work and where you go.
Madam Chair, Representative, I drive 86 miles one way to work every day. So, to me, $1 million worth of economic development would go a long ways to quality time with my family.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Any closing comments, Representative Solberg?
Madam Chair and members, first of all, thanks for the opportunity to have this before you. I know this is a very difficult issue, and any consideration you can give for some bridge funding will be greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Representative Solberg, Superintendent Herman, and Director Samples.
Madam Chair.
We'll now go to House File 1192, Representative Eakins' bill, and while he's coming forward, I wanted to remind the members, if you haven't already, most members have, a few members have not, please let our committee legislative assistant, Liz Mandelman, know if you're coming to the trip to Representative Faust District on Wednesday, because we have a few people we have not heard from, and we're just trying to plan for logistics. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I certainly understand your comments on respectfully trying to keep us on track.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to state that the reason for my questions on economic development is I really believe that it is an education issue. It's an issue that covers many areas,
mm-hmm.
and we need to get to the root issue to possibly end this flow of money for go student.
Thank you very much, Representative Olson, for tying that together. I was missing that point. Hey, Representative Eakin, welcome to the committee. We miss you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the time to be here. And
do you have a member to do your bill, move your bill, or should I move it?
I do not. If you could,
okay,
Madam
I will
Chair.
Move House File 1192 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And I understand that the amendment that you have here we should put aside because you have an oral amendment instead.
I do, Madam Chair. And the oral amendment would be on line 19, after the second comma, where it says small schools revenue, strike small schools, and replace it with fixed cost.
So on line 19, we are striking small schools and replacing it with fixed cost. So now it says fixed cost revenue. Is that cost?
Fixed cost.
What, singular? Fixed cost revenue. Got it. Anything else for your oral amendment?
Yes, in line 1.16, also where it says small schools, fixed cost.
Okay, very good. Representative Eakin.
And there's two places there, 1.6.
Okay.
And the second sentence as well, where it says small schools, it tries with fixed cost on 1.16. And one more change. That's line 1.19, where it says 100, replace it with 500.
Okay, so that's it?
That's
all right, Representative. I will move for Representative Eakin, or you're just going to incorporate that into your the motion to for the bill to be considered. I will just repeat it to make sure all the members have it. On the three places where it says small schools, we replace them with fixed cost, and then on line 1.19, instead of 100, it's 500. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Right. Please proceed and. We will hear about your bill.
Yes. And it replaced the small schools with fixed cost because really it's this is a bill designed to address the issue of the higher fixed cost, which, of course, the smaller schools incur because they can't spread out the cost of heating the buildings and the electricity and maintenance and so on over a large student body. So it does cost more per pupil. And this bill is designed to recognize that fact. What it does is it more heavily weights or front loads the first 500 pupil units so that they get a 10% bump. It's another 10% higher as far as the amount that they receive in revenue. And this, again, will help with a lot of the smaller schools that don't have the luxury of a large student body to spread their costs out over. So that's basically what this bill does. It does go to every school in the state, so all schools in the state are going to get the additional revenue for their first 500 students. But obviously the smaller schools, some of which are under 500 students, that means that the higher percentage of their student body will receive that additional revenue. And I don't know if there's...
Representative Eakin, yeah. On the overview of the bill, it says this proposal costs roughly $23 million, and that was with 100 pupil units. Now it's 500. Do you have any revised figure for us?
We do, Madam Chair, and there is a new run, and I don't know if there are enough copies for who would have that. If Mr. Strom...
Madam Chair, that was the run that was just handed out. Fixed cost revenue, $11.92 at the top, 10% of formula allowance times first 500 students. The very top line there says $87.4 million.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw. If I would just look at my papers, I could answer my own question. Okay. Any questions from the members before we go to, or did you want Mr. Walseth to testify first?
Yes, if Mr. Walseth would, that'd be great.
Mr. Walseth, please identify yourself for the tape.
All right. Madam Chair, Member Sam Walseth with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. I won't belabor the point about declining enrollment. You heard some excellent local testimony on the previous bill about the impacts on a district. But I did want to bring to the committee's attention a wonderful resource provided by the Center for Rural Policy and Development. And if you stop by Representative Morrow's office, I think he has a staff of these outside of his office. Every 6 months, the center puts out a journal on a specific topic, and last September's was on rural school funding. And the first chapter in this journal describes the rate of declining enrollment across Minnesota districts. And I think declining enrollment is something 75%+ of the districts in the state are dealing with right now. But especially the more geographically sparse you get as a district, the heavier your declining enrollment is. And there's just a couple of statistics I wanted to offer for the committee. A district, the journal ranks districts on six categories of size, ranking from 100 plus students per square mile all the way down to one student or fewer per square mile. And for districts who are under one student per square mile or fewer, over the last six school years, they've lost an average of 17% of their student body. And that kind of goes on up to, you know, the next category up to 11.5% loss, then 10%, then 7.4% loss, and on up. The point is, as Representative Olson was talking about, there's a systemic problem here about declining enrollment. School districts are still required and asked, and the public expects them to offer a full breadth of programming to their student body. The problem is with the funding formula based on a per pupil amount, as you lose per pupils, you're losing revenue. And for a lot of our small districts, you're losing revenue very, very fast. And so it's becoming very, very difficult to maintain programming. And asking our voters to continue to pass the operating levies is getting tougher and tougher and tougher. And so I think the idea here that Representative Eakin is bringing forward is a way to try and front-load pupil units for all school districts, but that will help with some of those higher fixed costs for a lot of those really small, geographically sparse districts. And I'm sure I'll conclude with those comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And that book, I think all legislators may have gotten a copy of that, because I know I did, and so I'd see a lot of head noddings. And the day that I actually had it in my mail, I was sitting next to Representative Mariani, who said he has spoken at conferences with that the group that produced it, and he said they are good people. So if Representative Mariani says they are good people, they are good people. So I have that on. I'm right now reading a book, Hostile Takeover, by David Sirota, and that's the next one on my reading pile by my nightstand. I always try to read something that helps me calm down after being here.
Well, Madam Chair, chapter one of this might get your blood boiling.
I know. That's the trouble with Hostile Takeover as well. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Eakin, I'm trying to understand the concept here. When you call it small schools, I got excited. Then it appeared to be more small districts rather than small schools. And now you call it fixed costs, and yet I'm finding districts that I assume have higher fixed costs getting the same aid as districts with lower fixed costs. And I'll contrast Anoka Hennepin, the largest district in the state.
Really?
Representative Dietrich, I don't remember where I heard it. I have the worst trouble with that. Perhaps Minneapolis police could help. Getting the same amount of revenue with 40,855 students. At last count, getting the same amount of revenue as Sleepy Eye with 609. Now, I'm willing to speculate that Anoka Hennepin has larger fixed costs than Sleepy Eye, and yet Sleepy Eye is getting $408 per ADM. Anoka Hennepin is getting $6. Help me understand the concept maybe better.
Okay.
And Representative Eakin.
Thank you. And Representative Dabney, and you're saying you believe that the Anoka has higher fixed costs?
Madam Chair, I think that they've got more buildings. Fixed costs like that that are no more flexible than the fixed costs in Sleepy Eye.
Representative Eakin.
Madam Chair and Representative Dabney, I would say probably not per pupil. If you're looking at Sleepy Eye, they probably don't, as far as the total amount, they're going to have less expenses in operating their buildings. But as far as per pupil, obviously, as far as square footage of building is concerned, you're going to be paying a higher rate per pupil in even a smaller school building than you would in a larger one with a much larger student population. So the idea is that, and especially with the schools with declining enrollment, as the population of the school district declines or the school building declines, as Mr. Walsh has said, you're going to be losing revenue. And one of the reasons we chose 10% bump is because the average school was losing about 10% over the last 5 years, and they lose that revenue. So this is to get them back to where they would have been if they hadn't seen that decline in their student population. And it is to help cover the fixed costs because, again, it does cost more per pupil in a smaller school because you're going to have to still maintain the same building. That's going to cost the same, even if you've got a small student body that's declining in population. The cost of operating that school doesn't go down. It remains the same, so it becomes more expensive per pupil. I don't know if that helps.
Madam Chair,
Representative Dabney.
I think I agree with you, except if you have what you're saying, the truth of what you're saying is true whether you've got one building or 40 buildings. And okay. I don't see this as being sensitive to, I don't know how many buildings Anoka Hennepin has. It's the largest school district in the state, so it's probably a good number. Although they've chosen to have larger buildings,
they've still got a lot of them, and I would imagine that's true for a district for a lot of them, as it is with a district that has one or two or three.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Representative Beacon.
And Representative Dabney, well, you bring up a good point. Maybe we do need to look at the number of buildings as well as the school district. And this is a work in progress, but I wanted to just throw this into the mix so that this idea is there to recognize the higher fixed costs in some of the school districts across the state and to help out with some of the declining enrollment school districts across the state. And I think this is one way that we can do that.
All good.
And I would now add in, I guess I have to defend Anoka Hennepin now too, and that is, you know, one of the, if we went to buildings and we said, you mentioned that Anoka Hennepin chose to have these mega high schools and mega schools, but I would say, I would be willing to bet that they knew that small schools were better for kids, but, you know, designed large schools because they have high costs and they have to have economies of scale. But the rural schools don't have enough students to end up with those mega schools. I wouldn't characterize it as a choice. Representative Dietrich, would you?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. It's a forced choice.
Mm-hmm.
You do choose it to a certain degree, but you design and you implement what you can afford and what your taxpayers will understand and work with you on. And that's the difference between property poor school districts and property wealthy school districts, or at least one aspect to the whole funding formula, which speaks to what we've been talking about in the earlier bill here today. Just to Representative Dabney's point, when in a school district like Anoka Hennepin, when we get below 400 kids in a school, we contemplate closing. That is the next step. Because at that point, it's about 450 students where you become inefficient in spending the dollars that you are given. And that's the level of accountability that we are held to. We just can't spend any money inefficiently. So it's a contrast. Two different problems, two different contrasts. And I must say, when I saw your bill on small schools, I did get excited because I thought, there might be a little opportunity here, a window of opportunity for me to look at large school legislation.
Always thinking, Representative Feature. We have Representative Demmer and then Representative Morrow. And then Representative Heidgerken. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Beacon, in your discussion, I sympathize with this. Again, I come from a school personally that has declining enrollment, and I have a couple of schools that are either at or slowly declining, and fixed costs is definitely something that's an issue because it takes the same number of dollars whether you have 600 kids or 560 kids or whatever. Mm-hmm. The question I have, however, is in your bill, Representative Beacon, as Representative Daffy said, you don't distinguish. Your discussion is about fixed costs for declining enrollment, and you have nothing in your bill or legislation that either talks about defining what fixed costs are, nor do you talk about the distinction between those who are declining enrollment and those school districts like Representative Olson's that are bursting at the seams and rapidly growing. So to use the argument of we're going to use this for fixed costs, you haven't defined any fixed costs here, and you also haven't defined anything having to do with declining enrollment if that's what you're attempting to do. And I'm wondering, as you said, this is a work in progress, will you be looking at those issues and trying to draw some parameters and maybe also help with the cost, which might give you a little better chance, but to directly, to target it more toward those that are declining enrollment that do have the fixed costs and also defining those fixed costs?
Representative
Beacon,
are you glad you're back here with us?
Yes,
this is
either. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Demmer, and you bring up some good points. And I do think, yes, that we do need to maybe more, target this more in a focused way. Representative Dabney brings up some good points as well. It's basically we're going off the assumption, I guess, that the first 500 students are going to be more expensive to educate than the second 500 students, simply because you have these fixed costs of maintaining the buildings, and also in a smaller school, you're also going to find that it's going to cost more to hire the teachers as well, because they're going to be having smaller classrooms, and so it's going to cost more per pupil for the teachers. So it's based on those facts that it is going to cost more, I guess, for the first 500. But as you said, we can target this more and to focus more and to define what those fixed costs are.
But again, this is an idea that I wanted to get into the mix, and certainly we'll be working on it and trying to better develop it as time goes on.
And the next bill is yet another way to look at declining enrollment and what to do about it when we get around to Representative Morgan's bill. Representative Morrill.
Madam Chair, thank you. This may be a question or a comment from Mr. Walseth, but the discussion of Anoka Hennepin reminded me, in a sense, of the flip side in the rural districts of consolidation and the efforts to consolidate schools in order to manage the fixed cost per pupil. As we proceed with consolidation, one concern that we have are transportation costs and the amount of time that kids, especially younger kids, spending on buses. Is it part of your design here, the hope that we might be able to help districts that are trying to avoid consolidation for those reasons by helping to manage their fixed costs?
Mr. Walseth.
Madam Chair, Representative Morrow, that's correct. Consolidation is not a panacea for parents and students and communities. It might be an option that some districts have to just kind of live up to at some point. But I think there's a big sentiment about keeping schools in their communities where the parents and children actually live. And then on the flip side, putting elementary kids on a bus for an hour every morning is not productive. It's not productive time spent, and there are also costs associated with transporting kids around. So I think the idea here is to try and keep those small schools open and help them deal with, as Representative Eakins talked about, some of those fixed costs. Madam Chair, if I could add just one other comment. MREA has been working with the PS Minnesota Coalition, and we've been looking at the research conducted by John Myers. And in that report, he's got a district size adjustment component that he talks about in that research. And it's interesting to look at that, kind of where a district becomes most efficient in terms of the number of students. And I think what he's identified is the districts between about 2,500 kids and about 10,000 kids are considered the most efficient in terms of managing fixed costs. And so districts that are on the very small end, he has a scale adjustment that goes down to about 2,500 until it phases out. But interestingly enough, on the flip side, if you get, I think, and I have to double check this, above 10,000 or 20,000, districts actually start to become inefficient at that point. And so if, we're going to kind of be curious, so, for an Anoka Hennepin or a Minneapolis or St. Paul or some of these other very large districts, there are some built-in inefficiencies there, too, which I think was a little bit of a surprise for most of us as we were looking at that research. And so if we're kind of really focusing on that John Myers research and what he's talked about for kind of scale adjustments for districts, there is kind of a reverse J where the smaller districts, go down and then it's kind of flat and then it actually starts to increase a little bit, too. So there, it's on both sides.
Thank you. That's fascinating. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Eakin, I didn't want you to get beaten up too badly over here, and I thought somebody from Northern Minnesota better speak up.
On the way.
But just a little education in business sense. I own a small business, and I lose money November, December, January, February being open. I'd be better off turning the key. I got fixed cost. I got fixed labor cost. I got fixed everything as far as property tax, everything goes. I got fixed cost. The same thing is true with school districts, small ones. When it gets busy, when I got a lot more customers, I made a lot of money. I can make up what I lost previously. And I think where you're trying to go at, and some of you in the community last year, and some states have done this, it's called section-based. You have fixed costs in small schools. You still have to teach to the standards. You still have to offer physics and all these other courses, even though you only have 8 or 9 kids in that class. Those are fixed costs. You can't spread it over 30 kids. And those are issues that oftentimes I'm brought up, and I think that's part of the issue that you're trying to bring up as well. And many states have done this already. It's called section-based. And it's something that we've heard last year, and the Representative Sikora didn't like it at all, but anyways.
Thank you, Representative Heidgerken. Before I go to the last questioner, Representative Olson, and then we will go to Representative Morgan's bill to give him equal time, but you will, right after we hear from Representative Olson, the pages will be passing out a new handout for House File 366 that will break out how much each district is getting for levy and how much each district is getting for aid. So thank you, Mr. Strom, for doing that for us. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I may not fully understand how this actually functions, Representative Eakin, but and forgive me if I'm being redundant. A suggestion to consider the fixed cost based on a formula, and I know we have plenty of formulas, but I'll suggest this now, Madam Chair, instead of giving Mr. Strom another hearing, bill request draft. if we were to come up with a formula that's based on building capacity, and when you reach that capacity, that would be your lowest level of funding. And a sliding scale of sorts, so every percent less under that capacity, your fixed cost per pupil arguably go up. So that would create a formula mechanism for a sliding scale based on a percent of capacity of building. And every percent, say every 10% below, there'd be a change in per pupil funding because it would be adjusted for your change in per pupil fixed costs. And I just offer that as a suggestion. I think the concept of where you're trying to go here is good, but that is a little bit more finely tuned with respect to large districts with maybe some buildings that are big and some a little smaller. This gets to site-specific. It's a site-specific type of strategy behind the formula suggestion. But I just offer that for an idea because I think this is a problem in all districts, and I probably shouldn't say that my district might be the least funding this way, but it still has merit in all the different places.
Thank you very much. Kind of like sliding fee based on need and size and so forth. Very good. Okay. Well, Representative Eakin, any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, thank you, Representative Olson. I think that's a very good idea, and it kind of gets at what Representative Dabney was talking about. I was a little bit, I guess, when I heard Representative Dietrich, you were talking about how really when you get down to a certain size, you're forced to consolidate or to increase the size of the buildings and consolidate districts. One of the reasons that I wanted legislation of this kind is so that it wouldn't encourage that kind of activity any longer, because we do have research that shows that it's not even so much the size of the classroom as it is the size of the school that determines the quality of the learning environment. And a small school site and setting is a much healthier learning environment. And so I think that we should not be encouraging these schools to shut down. And this is one way I think we can help and recognize, again, some of the higher fixed costs. And, again, there's work that needs to be done. But I wanted this idea to be in the mix. So thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Appreciate that. It's always great to have you here, Representative Eakin. And I'm enjoying this committee a lot with all these different ideas, and the bravery of the authors to run the gauntlet is always good. So thank you. And also, Mr. Walseth, did you want to end up with any comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're good. Okay. Thank you very much. This bill will also be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And now the final bill is House File 694, Representative Morgan. I think we're going to go on to this bill just because we want to give Representative Morgan his full time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I would like to move House File 694.
Representative Morgan has moved House File 694 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. What I'd like to do, members, while you get information out of your packets, I'll kind of give you a little background on what the bill is designed to do, or how it's going to do it, and then my distinguished testifiers here from the school district organizations around the state will have an opportunity to share their views of how my bill and others that we've heard today, perhaps because they're all related, will help districts in declining enrollment situations. Currently in law, there's a provision, and we've heard Mr. Strom discuss it, whereby declining enrollment districts, there's something in law to account for those districts and to help alleviate the challenges, the financial challenges those districts face. 23% of the enrollment count for any one year is based on the previous year's enrollment. And I think, as Mr. Strom has described it, that means for every four students you actually lose, you only lose funding for three of them. Nevertheless, even with that that mathematical adjustment in our per pupil formula, we still see and just about all of us here represent districts that have declining enrollment problems. We still see districts that they just can't keep up, and I hope my testifiers will address that situation a little after I'm done. What my bill will do is it will take that formula, and instead of just looking at 2 years and weighting the previous year a small amount and weighting the current year a large amount, it will take the average enrollment over the last 4 years. The current year plus the three preceding years, and thereby spreading out the effects, the negative effects, the negative impact of declining enrollment over the 4 years of enrollment decline. And the cost of this, Mr. Strom did a run, and you've got the numbers for you, is about $90 million, which is pretty close to the cost of the previous bill we just heard. And in order to help you, because I know you'll want to be looking at this, but I do hope you'll focus on what the testifiers had to say while you're looking, if you take a look at the runs, and on the left-hand column you can see the name of the districts and the district number. If you go over 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, what $90 million works out to, let's go to the second column from the right first. Second column from the right. If we took that $90 million that this bill would cost and put it on the formula, the second column from the right indicates what each school district would get if we just took that $90 million and put it on the formula on a per ADM basis. That column, what was it again, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 over from the name of the district, where it says at the top, increase per ADM, that shows you, under my bill, what each of those districts would receive. So you can compare that column. If you take a look at the top, Aiken is 77, Minneapolis is 474, Hill City is 189. You can compare that column to the second column from the right, which is what that district would receive if that same amount of money were just placed on the formula. And you can see which districts, essentially, which districts are suffering from significant declining enrollment. Some get a whole lot more, some get a little bit more, some get a little bit less. There's no doubt about it. And in my closing, I'll kind of talk about that, the choice we have to make in choosing to support this bill or not. But I'd like now, if it pleases the chair, to turn it over to my testifiers to talk about how it would affect their member school districts.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. Mr. Kroonquist or Mr. Lindell? Mr. Kroonquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and I'm here to speak in support of Representative Morgan's bill and appreciate his willingness to bring it forward. There's a misperception, I think, among a lot of people that declining enrollment is a rural issue and something that really is primarily faced by rural school districts. But in fact, the vast majority of metro districts are also facing decline. In fact, some of the fastest declining enrollment districts are in the metropolitan area. So it's a common problem across the state, and it's one that can have the devastating impact on a school district because it is just impossible for school districts to shed costs as fast as the revenue drops when enrollment is declining rapidly. I'm going to be very brief, Madam Chair, because you have further testifiers coming up, in fact, from one of our member districts in EMSD that will, I think, give you a lot better idea firsthand of the impact on a school district. So I will I'd be happy to answer any questions, but from there I'll turn it over to Mr. Lindell.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lindell.
So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I want to thank Representative Morgan for giving me the opportunity to be for something today. So it's, my karma is now in balance, and I feel
very for the day that says when we do things for people, it makes a, it chemically makes us actually feel good.
Right, well, now I'm in balance.
Yeah.
So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell, Schools for Equity and Education. We too support House File 694, and I want to say a couple of things. One of the things I'm going to be saying, you're going to be hearing a lot from me in the next 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever, is consistent or inconsistent with PS Minnesota. And this is consistent with what we've been talking about in PS Minnesota. Part of what we talked about in the solutions group or framework committee is some way to do, address declining enrollment and small schools and as well. And I think that we need to really recognize, as Scott said, that the districts with declining enrollments, especially districts with fast declining enrollments, really do face a lot of very difficult issues. One thing that I did, and it was handed out, is because I work so much with property tax and because I work so much with the equalization formulas, one of the things that happens with declining enrollment, what I did on this sheet that says example of how declining enrollment affects equalization, what I did is just took a district and just some numbers, and I put a 5% property wealth increase and a 1% student decrease, and see how that affects see how that affects the referendum market value per pupil. And you'll see that, you know, the numbers are the 5% per year going up, you know, adds, you know, very straightforwardly. But when you add that, when you take the effects of the declining enrollment, you'll see that that increase becomes 6% rather than 5%. Now, this is just a very rudimentary example. You know, think of districts where the property wealth is going up, you know, 10 to 15%, and the enrollment is going down 2 to 3%. Then you're talking about your referendum market value per pupil or ANTC per pupil growing that much faster. And many of these districts have to seek excess levies or trying to build buildings or whatever, and all of a sudden they're off equalization formulas, and the declining enrollment does play a part in that. And so I think as we move forward in trying to put together solutions that work for all districts and solutions that are going to work for the long term, we do have to look at declining enrollment in a very global way in terms of how it affects program and then also how it affects the tax system as it relates to schools. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Griffin Morgan.
Madam Chair, I recognize that there is at least one public testifier on this and probably more, so I'll be brief in my closing. In the interest of full disclosure, I want to note that I represent, there are three school districts within my legislative district. One of them has been in declining enrollment for 7 or 8 years. One of them is just beginning to decline in enrollment. One of them is still growing in enrollment. These three districts would be affected differently by this bill. The one that's been in declining enrollment for a long time would be helped considerably. The one that is beginning into declining enrollment right now will not be helped this year, but as their declining enrollment continues, they will begin to be helped more and more by this. The district that I represent that is growing will not be helped by this, and that presents a tough choice, I think, for many of us. What I would say and what moves me on this issue is that our current funding formula is designed to benefit those districts who have growing enrollment. It's the exact opposite of what Mr. Kroonquist said. As your enrollment grows, the way our funding formula works is you can expand a lot faster than your cost base increases, and that involves programs and keeping class sizes low and all those things we want to do for our students. It's the declining enrollment districts that are really hit hard, and that's why I feel this is important for us all to address. Thank you.
Thank you very much. How many people, raise your hand if you want to testify for or against this bill. Three people. I think I'm going to have members take the testimony, and then if people could be concise, we could get to questions if there are any from the members. Superintendent Watoon, why don't we take you first?
I think we're all together.
Oh, you're all together. Okay.
We can have a handout if we might do that.
Yes, the pages can handle.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lori Grisman, and I represent the Mountain View Public Schools. And with me today is Dr. Watoon, our superintendent. This is the second time she's been up here today. I said if we were to be talking about special education, we would be hitting the trifecta for our school district. Also with me is school board member Lisa Sherbeck. And I just wanted to preface our testimony by stating that this is really not a question of districts receiving less revenue for less students, but it's really the timing issue and the rate of reduction of revenue that impacts districts like ours who've experienced in declining enrollment. And so I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Watoon. She's going to give a history of really what we have done and how we have been doing a gradual downsizing in our district. And then our school board member, Lisa Sherbeck, will talk about really the impact financially that we have.
Thank you, Ms. Grivna, and Superintendent Watoon.
Thank you. Jan Watoon, Superintendent, Mountain View Public Schools. Madam Chair, members of the committee, over the last 5 years, the enrollment at the Mountain View Public Schools has decreased by 1,166 students, and this represents the largest decline. It's 10% decline in our enrollment and represents the largest decline in the 50 suburban metropolitan districts. The district has been implementing a number of measures to help us downsize because we realize that as we become smaller, we have an accountability issue and a responsibility to do that. And it has taken us 4 or 5 years to do the things that we've already done, and it's going to take us more years to do more things because we are going to become a smaller school district, and we understand that and accept that. First, we've worked with demographers, with the 7 city councils in our area, with community leaders, and others to assess the housing stock in our communities to understand market values, the mix of renters to house or homeowners, the number of school-age children, the birth rates, development and planning in our communities, and so forth. We've found that only one-third of the single-family homes in our communities have school-age children. And we found out that even when houses are turning over and new families buy houses, really not more than that. One-third of those houses are having any children at all in them. Secondly, we have consolidated schools. We've closed schools. We've taken that tough measure. We had 8 elementary schools 2 years ago. We closed 2 of them, and they were not small schools of 250 or anything. They were in the neighborhood of 650 student schools, and we closed 2 of those buildings. And consolidated some of our lease space, our administrative offices, community programs into those closed buildings. So they're being used, but not for the purpose that our community had hoped they would be used. Third, we've collaborated with another one of our cities and with Ramsey County and with some federal funding on a combined public works building in order to share and consolidate maintenance operations in our area. We think that's an innovative and productive use of collaboration. And finally, we've instituted an aggressive and some would say a pretty controversial marketing effort in order to retain students, encourage our resident families to choose our school district as their favorite education option, and to attract additional students from outside our attendance area. And while this has helped to slow the rate of decline a bit, the reality is that the number of students we have graduating as seniors each year in the next several years is just considerably higher than the number of children entering in kindergarten. And that's due to the fact of changing birth rates in suburban Ramsey County. It is not a change in the proportion of children attending homeschools or non-public schools. Our percentage of students attending the Mouser Public Schools has stayed steady. There just are fewer children. And considerably fewer. So I can certainly assure you that our school district has taken very seriously the notion of downsizing and making reductions, tough, tough reductions, and we will continue to do so. We simply are looking for a way to make it feasible to make those changes in a community and in a school system in a responsible way over a reasonable period of time. School Board Member Lisa Schobeck is going to proceed and give you more detail about the impact of the declining enrollment in Moundsview.
Thank you, Ms. Schobeck. And I believe I earlier today on another topic had an email from you, so you're a very active advocate for schools.
Madam Chair, thank you, members of the community. You helpfully have the yellow handout that we provided, and it talks a little bit about the impact of declining enrollment. When we talk about the effects of declining enrollment, in our district, we often say that for every 3 classrooms of students lost, the district loses 3 classrooms of funding. And how you can explain that is broken out on the sheet. I won't use your time today to explain that. But basically, as high school students graduate, there's more of them, they're weighted more heavily than the smaller kindergarten classrooms coming in. It's a loss of revenue for us. Our experience has been a yearly reduction of nearly 16 classroom equivalents for 48 classrooms of funding, close to $2 million annually. You've heard a lot about fixed costs today. Fixed costs cannot be reduced at this ratio. In fact, most of those fixed costs are increasing due to inflation and other factors. The puzzle that we use in our district, that graphic down in the bottom left-hand corner, emphasizes our district's commitment to downsizing, and the provisions of this bill to spread the decline rate over several more years will enable our district and others like us to reduce operations in a less drastic, more gradual manner, and as always, staying true to the overarching focus of all operational decisions, which is student achievement.
Thank you very much. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, first of all, I'd ask you, how firm do you want to go with the 3:45 deadline for committee today?
We have 2 people on the list, and I'm intending to take both of them unless you take up all the time.
Okay, well, obviously, just a comment first, Madam Chair, is that, you know, I know that a majority of the people in this committee and the majority of the people in the legislature represent districts that are in declining enrollment, so whenever we can come up with ideas like this to extract money from districts like mine and send them into others, it's very popular, bipartisan on a geographic basis, but I really I do feel this is horrifically unfair, and I would just...
Well, you do deserve some time, because I know you represent, you know, the other half, and that's legitimate, so go ahead.
Thanks. And, you know, I asked Mr. Strom here the amount of money that we pay right now for, I'll use a loaded term, I'll call it phantom students. We give money to school districts for students, not that they have today, but for students that they used to have. And that annual appropriation, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Strom, you said, what, $19 million? Okay. So this bill...
The record Representative Strom was nodding his head, yes.
Okay, sorry for the tape. So the bill that's before us would take the amount of money that we are paying schools for students they don't have, and we would increase it by 450%. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that's... I don't think that's fair. I don't think it's right. And when I look at the operating costs, maybe... I don't want to beat up on our testifiers here, and I see Representative Morgan has assumed his place at the table, so I'll ask him.
Yeah, Representative Morgan.
He's been a good sport, thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, help me understand, operating costs for schools, what is the single largest cost that school districts incur?
Representative Morgan.
Salaries and benefits for employees.
Say that again. Madam Chair, I didn't hear that, I'm sorry.
He said salaries and benefits.
Okay, and would it be fair to say, Representative Morgan, that the... disproportional or large percentage of those would be school teachers?
Representative Morgan.
I'm not sure if I would agree with the word disproportional, but certainly the largest amount would be the professionals in the classroom, yes.
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
And Representative Morgan, if the student count is declining, isn't it reasonable or rational to expect that we should see a proportional decline and the number of school teachers educating those kids?
Representative Morgan.
That's a very good question, Representative Garofalo. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think the Mountain View Public School System did a very good job of explaining two things. First of all, when 25 students leave, that's one classroom of kids. If you assume that 25 students really is a classroom anymore, and in my school it's not, but 25 students leave, that's one classroom with the kids and one teacher, but really they take with them three teachers worth of funding. The second thing is, those 25 students don't all leave from the same school. If you have 25 third graders leave, we have 10 elementary schools in our school district. They may be spread across all 10 schools, and so really they don't add up to a single teacher. There's really no one place where you can remove a teacher to follow those 25 kids out the door. So it would seem on the face of it to be that simple, but really in the world of staffing schools, it just isn't that simple, Representative Garofalo.
Well, Madam Chair, in the interest of time.
Garofalo, before we go on, I am not going to take the second person because I think Representative Garofalo is in a unique position. Unless, Representative Mariani, you are also going to be taking the same sort of tack as far as... I don't think St. Paul is in the same position, or not.
I'm just going to offer some broader observations. We can do that at some other
time. Okay, thank you, Representative Mariani. Members, we will take up until 10-2. So, Representative Brackwell, you have three more minutes, and I apologize that we didn't get two more of this because I think we should hear all sides of all these issues.
Well, just two quick comments, and in respecting the members of the committee, I won't take up the full 3 minutes, but just two comments. One is that, Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, at some point when those students leave, the costs have to be incurred, and we are in a world of limited resources, and it is a fair statement that this bill and other bills in declining enrollment take money from schools that are currently educating students, and it gives it to school districts for students they don't have. And that's, I mean, I don't expect you to agree with my analysis of it, but that is what happens. But final comment, Madam Chair, is I look forward in a bipartisan basis working with Representative Swales and Representative Bunn and other members that to making sure that we do not do this, because I do, obviously, just from a fairness standpoint, taking the interests of my district aside, the reality is there are school district in my legislative district that would benefit from this, but as a matter of principle in fairness, I am very much opposed to it. And I want to thank Representative Morgan for... letting me have a conversation with him about this.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo, and I appreciate the spirit and tenor in which you debate. It's a very healthy debate, and Representative Morgan, I think in fairness, we'll let you have the final word.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank Representative Garofalo for making important points in defense of the district he represents that I also represent. We do share a school district that is a growing enrollment school district. It's not a perfect solution. It's an imperfect solution to a big problem, and I I welcome efforts to make it a better solution.
And I'll get the final word because I'm the chair. P.S. P.S. Minnesota people, we would like you to finish your report. Meeting's adjourned.